Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 184. This is a show about all things Linux when it comes to hardware, software, news, topics, whatever tickles our Linux fancy. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I am here, as always, with my good friend, the Linux maven, the door-to-door geek, a.k.a. Stephen McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Mr. Coop, I bid you a good week and cheers.
Ditto, right back at you. So what's been going on with you?
Insanity. We are coming into the last week of school. Hopefully the torment for both my youngest one's teacher and me is drawing to a near. We have a big audit at work finishing up. Hopefully I won't need to take any sick days off between now and the end of the audit. So far, so good. But it's definitely a little bit of insanity, and I'm very happy to take a break and sit down and chat about some tech.
Oh, you and me both. Yeah, it's been quite the week here. Last week, I was talking about allergy season kicking into full gear. My meds are in my system pretty continuously. I'm not feeling the side effects anymore, but it's still way hotter than I'm used to. So dealing with that, yeah, work's crazy. Of course, summertime, you know. And yeah, I think all of our school districts were released last week, so we got to jump on you there. And Steam Summer Sale. And I have a 50-minute conversation about that. I'm just kidding. We just probably had a few people just stop the show right there. Yeah, I've been checking it every day. I think I've bought already 13 games, and I've spent less than $40. So it's been a good sale this year so far. I have about 6 days left. So there's a few things I'm waiting to see if it's going to get discounted even further, and then I'll pull the trigger on those. But overall, it's been very good. I did want to throw out one correction there, something I said last week, which I sort of caught during the show, but I just rolled with it. I was speaking about the Steam controller can only be used in big picture mode. That is not correct. I was getting caught up in my notes. It's the Steam Link that needs to be connected to a machine in big picture mode to be used on a display. At least that was a spec that I read in a couple of instances. So whether that's going to go on into the final build of the machine, we have yet to see. But that was not the case with the controller, because you can use it on any PC, regardless of if you're using Steam or not, because it's just going to be wireless or a wired controller with a micro USB cable. So definitely check that out.
Right. Well, here was my question about the Steam controller. Mm-hmm. You said, and I'm looking up and down the box, it isn't, down the sign, okay, so it is two AA batteries.
Yes.
That's what it kind of shocked me a little bit, because when I was looking at the back of the controller, it almost looked like a plate. I've seen pictures of the Xbox 360 controller, how the back, there's that, like, area where you put in the rechargeable battery. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the back of the controller like that, that's what I instantaneously thought. So two AA batteries. Now here's, I asked for just a guesstimation. How long do you think of game time do you think you'd get off of normal batteries? Because I expect their estimations to be high.
Realistically, let's just say off the shelf, let's just throw out, you know, Duracell Energizer regular batteries, not the Power Max or the lithium, you know, rechargeables. For standard, well, on the market right now, an Xbox One controller, I think it's less than, I want to say it's less than 60 hours before it bleeds them dry.
Well, 60's good. They say 80 on the website, and I didn't know if that was real.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, my normal, I have them right here. I'll put them on video here. This is great for the audio listeners, by the way. You guys are really going to dig this. These are my Logitech Ultimate Ear headphones, recommended to me by, of course, Steve Cherubino. And when I first thought of the words Logitech in headphones, I thought, really? But they're very highly rated. They were kind of expensive. They were my main headphones that I use for podcasting when it's not summertime and I'm so damn hot like I am now. But those are noise canceling with two AAA batteries. And here's the thing. I always forget to turn the noise canceling off. So I'll get done with the show. I won't see the headphones again or put them on until the next day where I've bled the batteries dry. So if you leave a controller on, after a while, it's supposed to disconnect from the system, assuming the system isn't still left on. So when they say an hour, let's just take the Steam controller, 80 hours of play time. That doesn't take into account of you potentially leaving it on or leaving it in wireless mode, constantly throwing data to the Bluetooth device, etc. So with anything involving batteries that are not rechargeable, I try to be careful, but I am a human being and I make mistakes. So I'll put a link in the show notes here after the show. But what I did was I bought some nice rechargeable batteries from, they used to be made by Sanyo, but now they're made by Panasonic. They're called the Eneloop. That's Eneloop. You can get AAA or AA size, and then you can get on Amazon or podcast.com/Amazon with a pack of, you know, 4, 6, 4, 8, 12, 16, 30, whatever, with a wall charger. And what's really nice about these too is that you can buy these extender sleeves. So I can use the AA battery, right? But I can put this sleeve over it to where it's now the size of a C battery, or I can put it over to make it the size of a D battery. So it will fit in those devices that use the larger batteries. I don't have many of those around the house. Some of you may have more, but that's a fantastic brand, very highly rated. I bought 2 or 3 packages of those batteries now just to accommodate all the devices in my home. I haven't bled through any of them yet as far as charges go. So if you have any controllers that you're using for gaming, I cannot recommend highly enough get rechargeable batteries one way or another, because you're going to need them.
Gotcha. Let me take a moment to curse you, because I didn't want to bring up Steam yet, but we did.
We did, yeah.
So let me just do a quick diverge. ThinkPenguin.com. Go to ThinkPenguin.com, browse the hardware, browse their offerings, browse their accessories. If there's something that you see that you like, do not hesitate. Email us, podcast@LinuxForTheRestOfUs.com. I will give you a coupon code. Secondary, podcast.com/LinuxForTheRestOfUsClub. Join the club. Get newsletter-type information, which is A, not spam, B, very sparse, so we don't overwhelm your inbox. A good, for instance, is I sent one out to everyone on the list a couple days ago. Venstone, LinuxGameCast.com, and, of course, Jordan and Padre. I put up a list, and we kind of have a link in the store. It's at a store, steampower.com, curator, blah, 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 Linux Game Cast Weekly. And if you go to that link, what you will see is a hand-picked, curated list of games that they approve of, quote-unquote. And the nice thing about Steam is at least it tells you right there whether or not the game is on sale, and if it is on sale, how much it's on sale. Mm-hmm. This, to me, was a nice curated list. And here's the gimmick. What we need as gamers on Linux, and when you're my age, I'll say, you need someone else to spend the time in the games and henpick specific games. What are the best games out there right now that you can run? So I could very easily see, like, Torchlight 2 is actually a good recommendation right now, 60% off. Shadow Warrior, highly, highly recommended, 85% off. And this is the kind of list that I really do beg people, don't just randomly buy games, unless, of course, it's a great deal, but trust on those that have already done the work, and guys who I honestly believe are completely independent and biased. That link will be in the notes directly to their listing. And yes, the Steam sale is going on. I did buy a couple. I have no idea what they were, but well, is there anything you wanted to talk about as far as the games and the sale, Cody?
No, I think that I should have had a list ready. Maybe I'll try to throw in the show notes a list of the games that I've already purchased, but if you go to the link the door is just mentioning, put out by LGC, that's a great starter point to look at some, not only just some fantastic games on Linux, but I believe every single one of them on that list are also on sale during the summer sale. I mean, you're talking, you know, some indie titles which are already moderately priced, like priced to sell at ridiculously lower prices, and then some of the AAA, you know, $30, $40, $60 titles up to, you know, 50% off. So And I can say this year, every single game I've purchased through the summer sale is natively playable in Linux, which is something I'm trying to stick to. There might be one I might go against the grain, but I'm not going to be playing that in Windows. I'm going to be playing it through Wine. And I will throw another link in here for something that Dort, I know, had mentioned. I can't remember if I was on the show or not at the time, but WineHQ. Have you been to the site, winehq.org?
Yeah. It's a really good database. I'll say it isn't perfect, but it at least gives you a good to fair idea what's the likelihood of a Windows application running.
Yeah.
A, at all, and B, is it going to run really good or possibly really bad?
Yeah, they grade not only on the point releases of the software itself, but also how compatible it is with the different releases of Wine. And when I remember hearing about this years ago, thinking, oh, that's good for me to check for applications I would use within Windows, especially now for those people, you know, wanting to either at least try Linux or potentially migrate altogether. But that website also has a very dedicated group of people testing the compatibility of games within Wine as well. And they're labeled platinum, gold, silver, bronze, or garbage. So it's nice to look at that. So I've been looking at games I want to purchase, checking on there. Like, well, the support isn't there. I'm not going to install Windows on a drive again. Okay, then I'll do without that game because I have so many I've purchased already. So I'll throw that link in the show notes as well. But yeah, winehq.org. They have a huge app database there, and which is also great, not just for games, but like, you know, Dor was saying earlier, and he had mentioned before, any application. You know, when you think of, you know, the make or breaks when it comes to people migrating over, you know, check, you know, Photoshop, TurboTax, that weird suite of software that came with your printer, fax, copier, scanner, teleporter, whatever, you know, go check out winehq.org. And that was thrown to me on recommendation by Pedro Mateus from LGC as well. For some
who?
Pedro, the
is he mean Padro?
Is Padro? He is he's the female on the show, the one with the long hair.
Ah,
yeah, the one that's transmitting from space. I hear he's on like a 12-hour delay. That's why nothing what he says makes sense.
Right. Here with my Steam quote unquote discovery, I put Ubuntu 14.04. on my Intel NUC. My Intel NUC is an original Intel NUC. I believe it's a quad-core Intel Celeron grade, but it's not a Celeron, like 1.8.
Mm.
4 gigs of RAM, 64 gig SSD, nothing spectacular, okay? But I put it on the NUC, I took it upstairs, I plugged it up to the 60-inch TV, and I was intending on doing YouTube and Retro Rig and this kind of stuff on it, and then I'll just put Steam on this thing. I put Steam on, I launched big picture mode, which I never actually been in, where I like once accidentally triggered it and like, oh, how do I get out of this crazy thing? And then finally got back out of it. 3 minutes maybe after being in big picture mode, I completely understood what I was expected to do with the controller to move around and go around the ecosystem kind of thing. I am pleasantly shocked at how polished that interface is. It makes me more hopeful that Steam consoles will be easier for normal consumers to digest and use and purchase and have fun with. I will say I'm using a PS3 remote, which apparently is stupid. Some of the button mappings make no sense in the game. So, and I know right now, people would say, "Well, go get an Xbox 360 controller." I do not want to give the company a penny if I don't have to. So I'm probably just going to hold off and get a Steam controller when they come out and experience as I should with that controller. Because my logic is every game that is controller compatible would automatically just work like golden. I know there's profiles, Ben said there's profiles you can download and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that makes me feel better. I will say the typing interface for letter entry, the split second I saw it confused me, made no sense. And I said, this is stupid. Then 5 seconds after using it, I said, oh, this makes kind of sense. It works.
Yeah, it's really good.
And the web browser is actually a full-featured web browser. Works just fine. But I will say I'm just genuinely impressed and I don't want to say shocked because it isn't shock per se. But I definitely like what I'm seeing, and I'm looking forward now to playing with it more and seeing, you know, what kind of stuff can happened when I'm in that big picture mode. I first downloaded Don't Starve because that's a really late game. And just see how my experience is going to be in big picture mode. I'm going to try that tonight, hopefully.
Nice. Maybe we'll do a, in the next week or so, we'll do a Steam Summer Sale recap episode and keep it to keep the gaming out of the normal show, like some people are asking for. But yeah, I'm
who's asking this?
People who email. I
they do. What email address do they email? Because I don't see them in my inbox.
Oh, whatever. They might be sending it. Anyway, there are some people that don't like us talking about games on this show.
Well, they can go listen to, I don't know, something else.
Yeah. I had one guy write me, I don't want it. Well, I do want to get into this. Listen, don't think I should talk about it, but
I don't care what they say. Computing is my habit and my hobby. Children are my life. Mm-hmm. And if I can entertain them at the same time, getting my little fix with the computer thing at the same time, I'm going to jump on it.
Yep.
And unfortunately, in this show, I can only talk about things that I experience. So I'm going to talk about games. Now, when the kids are 18 and move out or get kicked out, whatever happens first, I probably won't talk about arrested. Games. But I have about 10 years for that to happen.
Yep. Yeah. And overall, as a whole, us talking about gaming on the show is showing how much the platform is maturing and becoming more.
Grown.
What's that?
Has grown.
Yeah, it has grown into becoming more accessible.
Mm-hmm. Right. To use crappy marketing terms, the depth and breadth of gaming on the free GNU Linux operating system has just gotten bigger and better. Exponentially.
To take it a step further, the synergy at which the system is now operating is remarkable and out of the park. Can I get your buy-in to agree on that?
We'll have to take this offline, and we'll have to stick a pin in it and see what comes up.
All right. We'll touch base after the show.
Yeah. I want to mention this email. I don't know if you saw this email.
Well, let's take a look.
By Jake. Jake sent us an email via podnos.com/contact.
No, I did not see this.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. He basically just said, if you want a Git GUI, check out and put a URL in there. He said, it's a web-based interface wrote in Node.js. Great on the desktop. Okay. First off, Node.js is building itself to be one of the biggest powerhouses when it comes to interactive web style development. Okay, and the tool is called Ungit. And in typical, you know, GitHub fashion, you go to the website and it doesn't really tell you much until you see a screenshot, at least for me, because it's just words and hyperlinks and more words. Mm-hmm. But there is a quick intro to Ungit YouTube link right there on the main page. And I will say I am blown away, shocked, and impressed. It's just a really quick install once you have Node.js installed. Node.js you can install on any platform, I will say that. It's a little bit tricky, and then it basically comes with almost its own package management system called NPM. So once you have Node.js installed, you basically just type npm space install and then like dash f space ungit. And then you just hit ungit, you hit enter, and what happens is it launches a web browser. And this is an unbelievably good-looking interface. I mean, this is the kind of thing where if this was the show Silicon Valley, these people would be making some money. Okay? Because it just looks good, works good. Takes some of the complexity out of Git and how to use it to where it's very easy to fork, very easy to merge, very easy to rebase, very easy to follow the flow of code, see where the changes are made, very easy to make comments to it, very easy to push and pull up to GitHub even. It's built in. You can just one-click push up to GitHub. I cannot encourage people enough, if you are at all interested in file revision management or code revision, merging and forking, you have to check out Ungit, unless of course you want to learn all the particulars of Git and Git commands. This is a fantastic interface. The video is about 6 minute long video. In the web interface, it even gives you green and red highlighting in the preview for the file. Green is new content, red is content that's been taken out. I'm now looking for an excuse to run Git at my house for something. I don't know what, but something, because this is really that cool.
Yeah, this interface is much different from any other thing I've seen in relation to Git and the organization. Looks very neat. Yeah, I have not messed around with it whatsoever. So if and when you get that set up, well, I should say when, let's give you some credit. Please follow up and let us know how it turned out for you.
Absolutely. And I forgot I was going to today go into work and give it to a coworker who's running a Git server on Windows. You know, whatever. But I wanted to give him this because he did seem fairly new to Git. He's used a couple other things in the past, put it that way. But when I told him about Git and he read Git, he instantly said, well, why in the hell ain't we using this? I said, because you ain't using this. He said, can I use this? I said, yes. It's a simple thing called going rogue. He said, what do you mean? I said, you don't tell anybody. You just put it on a box and start using it. And then after a while, you say you need this, and then we justify why we put it every place else.
That's right.
Right. So he installed it, and he started playing with it, and he said, oh my, this is fantastic. We're, you know, why haven't I known about this? That's because you're using Windows. I mean, you know, what do you want me to tell you? But I'm going to show him this tool, and I want to get his reaction to it, because something tells me he'll be very impressed by this as well.
Very nice.
Yeah, and I can't thank Jake enough. This is just absolute gold. I will have a direct link in the show notes to that video as well, to the Un-Git GitHub page.
Well, very nice. And also, it's worth noting that he contacted us through our pandas.com/contact link. So, that link takes you directly to a contact form. So, if you haven't sent us an email to podcast@linksforthestofus.com, which is a mouthful, or you haven't sent it a voicemail, that's another fantastic way to hit us up and throw us anything, much like Jake just did. Any cool links or things that you want brought up on the show or stuff that we haven't, because Dor and I didn't know about that. So Jake, thank you for touching base with us and showing the rest of our audience how easy it was to get in touch with us through the pandas.com/contact link.
Absolutely, absolutely. This next one, I'm not going to lie, I can't think of the word. Borrowing, taking, whatever. Matthew Williams, a.k.a. Lord Drakenblut, who is going to DerbyCon and who literally chewed me out for like 5 minutes, which of course I'm over-exaggerating. He's going to DerbyCon. Zoke is too, if you don't know who Zoke is. I feel sorry for you. Zoke is an unbelievably cool guy with an unbelievably thick, because, you know, I'm American. He has a thick accent from the UK. Lives in Western U.S. He's going to DerbyCon, which I believe is in Kentucky or something. So if you're in that area, just look it up, DerbyCon. I believe it's Kentucky. It might be Tennessee area. Go there and meet Lord D and Zoke. Trust me, good times will ensue. But I stole this link from Lord D, and I believe it's pronounced Open Sancori.
Yeah, Sancori or Sancore.
Sancori, I'll stick with Sancori.
Yeah.
Okay. Everything out there can't be perfect at everything. This is where I'm going to go with this. Can't be perfect with everything, okay? This site does a pathetically horrible job of explaining how you actually use this tool. They tell you what it is, they tell you what it can do, but they do not give you real examples of how this can be used. I literally had to search and research, and I'm lazy. I had to research like 20 minutes to figure this thing out, okay? This is a free interactive whiteboard software. Okay. In executive enterprise areas, you see sometimes hanging on the wall $2,000 to $4,000 pieces of hardware that's a whiteboard, and then with an extra, like right above it and out just a little bit, a projector, but it actually projects down at an angle, mm-hmm. but it deals with the trapezoid, right, so it puts out square. Yep. This is free interactive whiteboard software that's HTML based. And this proclaims to work with every piece of hardware out there. Which, let me just say, that's quite a bold statement there, Open Sancore. But this kind of software is utterly needed. And it needs to be ubiquitous across all areas. Because when I saw HTML, I thought, well, I put it on my podcast.com and then everyone can log in and we can collaborate on it. But this is not what I get. What I get is this is more of a physical, interactive whiteboard experience. You can use it on graphics tablets and PC tablets and any type of computers, quote unquote. But its real intended is to be is on what they call, I believe it's DITs, digital interactive tables, or digital interactive whiteboards. Their site is top notch. I will say that their site is top notch. Their software looks top notch. Everything looks great. But I didn't get how to use this stuff.
See. I'm glad that you were a little confused as well, because I'm looking at this and I have a use case for it, which I'll talk about in just a second. But yeah, they use kind of a lot of vague speak on exactly what this is. For instance, it says Open Sanctuary is a multi-platform open source program that is compatible with every type of interactive hardware. It is also translated into many different languages. Its range of tools is adapted to all users from beginners to experts. Okay, great. So what I'm wondering is, for instance, if the class is gathered around one of these larger DITs and the teacher is at their desk or at the head of the class on their own interface device, can they write stuff on the tablet and have it show up in a quote-unquote session on the table in front of the kids?
Well, I'll put it like this. I do believe just about every – that's a really bold statement too – a lot of school classrooms now by default have in them whiteboard hardware. I know in my son's school, this is not a rich district we live in. We are not made of money, people. At least 3 out of 4, 4 out of 5 classrooms I saw have an interactive whiteboard in them.
Okay.
So to me, this would be a great Tightwad Tech piece of software. Tightwad Tech, Mark Cockrell,
yeah.
Eleven Opie. When he used to work at the school district, he got his name Tightwad Tech because schools have no money. So this would be a good Tightwad Tech type tool.
And when you look at the bottom of the website, the organizations, most of them being educational, that are using it are, you know, huge universities and also Wacom. And if that name sounds familiar, they make these tablets that people use to draw. So when you think of an industry standard on tablets used for physical interfaces, as far as either writing or drawing, Wacom tends to come to mind.
Gotcha.
So very, very good find there. Yeah, I would, and see what's nice about this too is that with the software there, it's kind of like that large toolbox I've always talked about. It might come with all these features, but if you find one really good use for 1, 2, or 3 of those features and you implement it well in the right scenario, it's going to be one of those tools that just provides value beyond measure. And considering that this is an open project and it's free, you're already starting out with no investment other than time, with potentially what you were saying, with hardware that already exists in the potential places where this would be applied. So, excellent find.
Yeah, and I do believe this mimics other software so much you wouldn't need a lot of training. It looks very similar and self-explanatory.
Yeah, the interface looks intuitive. I mean, it's, you know, big icons. And anybody who's basically used any piece of software in the past, you know, 15, 20 years can look at it and go, oh, that might be an icon to draw because it's a pencil. That looks like a color palette, you know? So, yeah. It looks pretty easy enough to where just about anybody should be able to pick it up and start at least interfacing with it to a certain extent.
Gotcha. And I have one more that I leached. That's the word I was looking for. Leached from Matthew Williams. And I've seen this layout before. And it was weird. It was in an Android app that I was playing with, and I believe you might have played in it too, called Trello. Trello is supposed to be in target where multiple people can congregate and go over tasks that need to be done, who was going to do them, how far they are, and how far it is completed. And this is called LibreBoard, LibreBoard. And it says it's a open source Kanban, Kanban board, which I've never heard of the words Kanban board, but there's a lot in this world I don't know about. Basically, think of this as, he put it, a cork board. Okay, I'm really sorry about this, non-US people and people who do not like the show Silicon Valley. Liam Tidwell tricked me into watching. a couple episodes, and then I had to watch the rest of them. They have on the show a scrum board. Scrum board is basically a block. It's a board on the wall with different squares on them where they put post-it notes of things that need to be done. And they're separated into columns and rows of severity and type of task and how complicated they are. That's what this is almost like. Think of it as a digital board where people can put task and color coordinate, I believe, is the severity of it. And I'm being trolled by Richard Hughes, who says it's pronounced Kanban or Kanban. K-A-H-N-B-A-H-N or C-O-N-B-O-N. Kanban. Kanban. I'll go with Kanban, Richard. Stop trolling. This, to me, okay, I did like the apps I saw on Android. I did think they have potential. I did not like the fact that everyone had to buy into this quote-unquote ecosystem in order to use it. But this might be frictionless enough is the way I will put it. Especially because I can get it myself, download it myself, and put it on my own server. We don't have to worry about third-party tracking, third-party websites. We don't have to worry about, is a website going to go up? Is a website going to go down? Are they going to start charging money or anything? So I cannot thank Matthew enough, which I have. At least I try to repetitively every time he gives me these kind of goodies. This, to me, could be a fantastic cooperative tool. And they also have verified Docker images. So if you're running Docker, you can just click, bang, go, and you're up.
Boom, plug and play.
Yeah.
Go for it. I know this looks, it's another collaborative task management piece of software. And we tried at least three, if not maybe four or five of these within the past 12 to 18 months. And there are some fantastic solutions out there that come highly recommended with a 30 or 60 day trial. And then you got to pay not only a monthly fee, but then more for additional seats or, you know, potential users. And then, for what we were trying to do, some of those were a bit too expensive. We couldn't justify the cost. And then there were others that didn't look nearly this good. And considering this is just, I mean, it's another, looks like another fantastic implementation of what some of those are doing and doing well. But the fact that it's also free and you can host it yourself, especially in this day and age where you're talking, I mean, for instance, the conversations that we would have just as Podnuts, right? We may not want to have leaked out. But even then, I mean, it's not huge, serious, big deals. Like if it got leaked, like, oh, our lives are ruined. But if you're talking about a corporate environment, perhaps, this would be a fantastic opportunity for them to host their own instance of this. And then they control all the data. They don't have to worry about meetings or information getting leaked out to a third party as long as they're careful because it's not being hosted by anyone but them if they implement it correctly. So, yeah, great find.
Yeah, this is the thing I could see putting on a pie and just leaving in a corner kind of thing off on its own or putting it up on a hosting provider. Either way, it should be easy to set up.
And speaking of pie...
Yeah, exactly. This thing, it really teasing me viciously to spend some money. The main reason I didn't just jump on this and try to do it is it looks like it might not make for a game, for a great portable game environment. Mm-hmm. But it could be a good, useful, functional, portable, mini, handheld, they say, notebook, I call it almost closer to like a scratch pad type pocket laptop, quote unquote, made of course out of a Raspberry Pi. Of course, it's a little bit bulky and of course, it's a little bit clunky because it's a Raspberry Pi, so it's a little bit big. They say one of the things is a 3.5 TTF or TFT screen is much bigger and slower than the 2.8 one. So it looks like they opted for the 3.5 just because of the looks, but if you want performance, you go for the 2.8, which that kind of shocks me. But this is complete, utterly, ridiculously broken down step by step by step by step on how to make yourself a portable, pocketable laptop-like. Think of it as like an old flip phone, maybe, or an old smaller like Nintendo DS.
Yeah.
Like... flippable screen.
Mm-hmm.
The hook and the crook with all of these things is where are you getting the case? Which one of the parts and tools and supplies they have listed is 3D printer. Well, that's a little bit hard for some of us. But they do allow you to download what is called the STLs. And I'm learning here at the same time. The STL is like saying the printer output of the 3D case. So if you take the STL files, give them to someone who's a professional 3D printer, they can basically give you back everything that you need. This is really cool. I really would much rather have a banana pie, one of these things, just for power and versatility, built-in Wi-Fi, built-in Bluetooth, built-in, all these things are already built into it. If I want to, I can take it down, sit it at my desk, plug up a SATA cable to it, bang, have a honking hard drive with really fast access, and not just a Raspberry Pi. But this case is utterly customly designed for the Raspberry Pi, so I cannot use it.
Mm.
But it's really cool. I got to give these guys a lot of credit. This is a great, fun project. This is the kind of thing I would honestly love to be able to do with my kid, to show him how to make, how to put stuff together, how to, you know, become a maker, at least to a degree.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, no, don't put it out of the realm of possibility. You see, you and I've talked to you about this before, so I'm gonna get on your case a little bit here too. You don't need to own a 3D printer to 3D print. There are several places in communities around the country and around the world that have these available for the public. Now, you can become a member of a maker or a hackerspace. There are community programs that let you print for a small fee, etc. So don't put this out of the realm of possibility. For instance, I don't want to go too many details because a project I'm working on, but there's a device that I want to make, which is a recreation of something in a video game that this would be perfect for. And there are already some schematics for it online. So I want to, here's what I'll do. I'll put my money where my mouth is. In the town I work, there is a place where I can go and have something like this printed. I'm going to research with them. I'll report back on a future show on my experience of getting something 3D printed, and I'll actually bring it to the show. So for those of you who watch it live on YouTube, you can check out what I printed.
Cool. Yeah, I'll say my only, to be very honest, my only problem, quote unquote, with this project isn't that it's Raspberry Pi, isn't that it's 3D printer. It's that I have literally never soldered before, and obviously my son hasn't. So we literally might have to buy double of some stuff because we might ruin it.
Yeah, well, no, because it is daunting. I've done very little soldering myself, so I understand your hesitation. But once you know how to do it correctly, it's easy. Once you get over that initial bit of fear or hesitation, you'll be fine. The one thing I will say this has going for it, the form factor is great. When we've seen any of these portable Raspberry Pi solutions, some of them are ridiculous. There was I can't remember if it was a video you posted or I maybe just found it on YouTube, but there was a kid in Eugene here in Oregon who took a display off of a old MacBook and then custom cut layers of wood to fit it together to make a Raspberry Pi laptop, and that thing was awesome. But whenever I think of these mobile Raspberry Pi solutions, it's usually just these horrendous, you know, Frankenstein monster things that you wouldn't want to carry around anywhere. This, on the other hand, is collapsible. You know, you fold it up. It's a small enough form factor where you can put it in a bag. Heck, probably even in your back pocket. But I also like the fact that it uses, let me get the name of this correctly. It's one of the... just his miniature keyboard, but it's one of the is it Bluetooth enabled or is it it's got to be Bluetooth.
It's a very popular home theater PC style keyboard. It's like what I call a palm top keyboard.
Yeah,
it's quite small.
Yeah, it's a nice keyboard with a QWERTY layout, numbers, and F1 keys, and a little touchpad along the right hand side with, it looks like, right and left click and then directional arrows. Yeah, this thing's cool just by itself, but having that implemented into this device is very neat, and it keeps the form factor quite small. So yeah, I would definitely make one of these.
here's the only thing looking at it that I do not like. Okay, the Raspberry Pi, there's a layer of stuff built. You have to take the screen, bend pins out of the way, and then it's like a sandwich of the screen, the battery, and then the Pi. Okay, we all know Pis can get hot, technically, if you run them hard. Batteries can get warm if you run them hard. They literally have it like sandwiched. There's nothing holding the battery in, from what I can tell. There's nothing holding the Raspberry Pi in. The screen is screwed to the front of the case, and then it looks like there's like pressure from the back plate is the only thing holding the Pi in one piece and the battery in one piece. That scares me a little bit. I might be looking at the directions wrong, but everything tells me the Pi is floating inside of it, and so is the battery.
Well, I'll throw this out there to you. You buy the stuff, send it to me, I'll make it.
I already did.
Okay, it's in the mail. Sweet. Okay. And how could we possibly afford for us as this show to purchase parts for such an endeavor? How could we make that happen?
With a thing called money.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Typically, money can get you things. It does usually take a little bit more than you think sometimes, or sometimes a little bit less, but it's typically money.
And are we getting money from a certain source in order to potentially make these happen?
I'm getting it from all of the listeners and contributors to the show.
How?
Podnos.com/Amazon. And what I found out is podnos.com/eBay. We technically have affiliate links in every eBay. So eBay UK, nice. eBay CA, eBay everything, it should work, I will say. I have two links coming next, Cody, and they're kind of joined at the hip, and they kind of pronounce something is what I want to say. First one, I want to make sure people understand this completely. This is a time.com article, okay? This is not a Verge article. This is not a CNET article. This is not a ZDNet article. This is not a PC Magazine article. This is not an Engadget article. This is not an Ars Technica article. This is Time, okay? That alone should find this a little bit peculiar, but of course you know this is just for clickbait and for traction, but this is what the article is entitled. This is Microsoft's big secret Windows 10 feature, okay? And as you go down the page, what they're basically saying, what these people are saying, I'm not going to say there's truth to this, but what these people are saying is the big feature is an open source framework that encourages devices to be interoperable. Okay, it's called AllJoin, AllJoin. Mm-hmm. And they're saying it's open source. And it's basically the kind of thing that, like, the Internet of Things, it's going to enable greater connectivity between Internet of Things devices. So it's an open source framework that encourages devices to be interoperable. I have no idea if this is actually open source, open core, open architecture, or what, or just open API. But when have you ever heard anything open source being in a Microsoft operating system before? They might have. Maybe everyone has something in it. But this is the first time I've ever heard it, and I've ever heard a non-tech site go out of their way to mention it. Now, it's not a long article with big interviews. It's literally just a couple paragraphs. Nothing crazy. But they're saying, Time Magazine is saying, Microsoft is going to be successful with Windows 10 by leveraging open source, at least fundamentals.
Good for them.
Well, here's the thing. That was one link. Okay?
Right.
And that was on time.com, which I'm still kind of shocked time.com have it. This next one, of course, is on Wired. You got to, take
well, whatever. May I address something about this previous link real quick? Mm-hmm. Do you own any smart home devices yourself? Temperature control, security cameras.
I do have plenty of smart automation going on, but it's typically me just telling my kid to do something.
Right. Yes, this is a valuable feature, surely, for those who actually have these devices in their homes. Personally, I don't have any of them either. So to have them this is a sign of the times, wink, rim shot, of how out of touch maybe this publication is, but for the majority of people in the world, this means nothing in practice. It's still very new and very early stages as far as you're already seeing some companies start to emerge of being a big player in the space. And I would rather see competition than one company just take over the entire, you know, the spectrum. But I've done some research into some of these, and there are so many pros and cons at kind of every level you go up and every one of these potential solutions that it's almost, for me, someone that I might want to sell my house in 3 to 5 years, I can't justify the cost in installing a solution when I know that it's probably going to be obsolete that much quicker, or something else would come along that's much better. I personally, like me being who I am in life, I can't see, I just can't justify the cost of it. And then now people who read this who are already thinking, oh, maybe I should upgrade to Windows 10, they're going to see that and go, well, yeah, I'm totally getting Windows 10 now. But then they also might not have any of these devices in there. So yes, it's another little checkbox they can check off, but is that really going to apply to the majority of people? That is that the one thing they want to tip people over the edge for downloading their free update to Windows 10? I don't know. But that aside, the fact that it's utilizing open source software, that's cool.
We don't even know if anyone else is going to pick up on this. This might be something that they put out there that everyone else just ignores. They're going to need hardware manufacturers and to get on board with this kind of thing. But my logic is this technology is not going to matter to anybody until you go to buy something and it's already built into it. There's like no option to get it otherwise.
Right. Yeah.
When you buy a washer mm-hmm. or a dryer, it automatically has an Internet of Things. When you buy your new house, the doorbell and the smoke alarm system will automatically be integrated. That kind of thing. That's the only time when I think this is going to actually matter. It's when it's the default.
I agree. It has to be implemented at launch or at point of sale in order for it to be effective. Now, that being said, AllJoin was developed by the All Scene Alliance, a group of more than 150 companies, including the likes of Electrolux, Honeywell, LG, and Qualcomm.
Oh, there you go.
So it already has... I mean, the larger manufacturers of making these devices have already pooled together to make this happen, but it's still in its early stages. I wish them the best of luck, but personally, I can't see myself getting one of these devices in the foreseeable 3, 5, 7 years. I just part of it is I've seen cheaper solutions that I can make and operate and control myself that are better. And part of it is it's priced out beyond my needs.
Yeah. I'll just wait for the kids to move out, and then I'll have to worry about getting computers to do my stuff.
There you go.
Here was the second article, though. This was by Wired. And, of course, they just want clicks. But the article is called, Open Source is No Longer Optional, Not Even for Apple. Okay. I did actually read a little bit of this. Okay. Here's the bottom line. In my book, this is actual, factual, documentable evidence and proof that Linux is already winning in a lot of mindsets. When other proprietary closed source operating systems not only have to acknowledge the existence of open source, but they actually have to pull some of the either methodologies or actual software of open source into their OSs or into their future projects in order to be successful. To me, that is admittance. They're basically admitting that there are places, there are parts where open source is the way to go. Mm-hmm. And I will say, I've been working at the same enterprise for 20 years. It wasn't very long ago where if you said the word open source, you were blacklisted from meetings. If you said the word open source, they would scoff at you. If you would say the word open source, you had a definite possibility to get genuinely insulted by superiors. That is no longer the case. That is no longer the case at all. Open source is making itself known in a very big way in a lot of things. I'm not saying Microsoft is going to go belly up and Apple's going to go belly up. The one thing I've learned in all my life with technology is it's nearly impossible for something to completely go away, i.e., physical LPs and albums in the last couple of years have seen their greatest sales numbers in over 30 years because they're not dead. They're not gone away. People, there is a place for them. There's a niche for them. There is a desire for them. Same thing with closed source software. There will always be a need for it. There will always be an excuse for it. There will always be people who are advocating for it in businesses and enterprises. But I do believe it's going to become more and more normal and more common to have free Libra open source ethics, methodology, or and software injected into other things. Even if it's just a side thing, even if you still install Microsoft Team Foundation Server, but you install Git as the code repo, you're going to have open source, and it's going to have to work hand in hand with closed source software for many, many, many years. This is a very interesting time we live in, and I know that's and I've said like 10 cliches in this one part.
Yeah, I'm just glad to see the. I would rather have the big companies open source their existing projects rather than have them pretend that it doesn't exist and try to keep everybody into their ecosystem. And just like and pretend they're the only game in town, that they are the only source for whatever product that is. I mean, you're talking about the article references, you know, Microsoft open sourcing .NET last year. With Apple opening up Swift being the successor to Objective-C, it was a big deal. It was created a year ago, but now the fact that they're open sourcing it, that's even better. And I like to see these companies doing this stuff, because even though it's a product I might not use, just the fact that, yes, it is being acknowledged and that it is being opened up is a win for us. All right, on to the next link. What is this next one, Dor?
This is a Linux.com article, and I cannot encourage people enough. Linux.com is the all-encompassing website for all kinds of Linux information, tutorials, how-tos, community, jobs, everything. But I think the people who get the most bang for the buck out of Linux.com is the newest of the newest of the new people in Linux. And here's a perfect example. Linux.com news, it's under the news section, feature blogs, Linux training, 7 steps to start your Linux sysadmin career. I've said this for a couple years. There is no better time than right now. If you're going to change careers in the next 5 to 10 years, there's no better time to change right now and start to work towards Linux administration or just Linux in some kind of arena. The steps are actually easy. Not all are free. Number 1, install Linux. Everybody out there has step-by-step showing you how to install. First thing I suggest, do it on dedicated hardware. Go to the pawn shop, buy a $50 or $80 laptop, install it on that. Do not try to dual boot. Do not install it in a VM. Do it on dedicated hardware. It's not only the best experience, it's the most stable experience, and it's the one that you can easily use for a long period of time without worries. Number 2, take the LFS 101 intro course to Linux. This is a invaluable resource if you are brand new to Linux. That's all I gotta say. It is at edX. If you don't know who edX is the cooperative website between a bunch of universities where it's very easy to get online courses, where you get online certificates saying that you completed courses. Really good stuff. After that, they say at least look into the LFS 201, which is the more advanced essentials for system admins. Those 3 things alone, you can probably fudge your way through an interview into an intro job, or to a basic intro, looking for, beginner level type job to grow into a junior or senior developer. They do have more steps, easy ones. Practice, get certified, get involved, learn to love the documentation. I will say the only two things that no one can replace in a tech is experience and comprehension of documentation. Okay. The more experience you have by getting involved with a whole bunch of things that you possibly can, the more experience you have, the more experience you have, the more wisdom you have when it comes to products, services, operating systems, servers, whatever. And when you understand the flow of documentation and the mindset of how documentation was created, it makes it much easier for you to find what you're looking for in a long manual versus going on Google and typing in random searches and seeing if you can find what you're looking for. This is a great, simple bullet list of how to get started making your next career off of a Linux.
And usually, I can say that when I was researching this within the past couple of years, the big question is always, where do I start? If you just go to linux.com, not only this link in particular, but they have a wealth of information on not only free courses, paid courses, different certifications, but just at least by navigating that, you're going to have a good idea of what you should be studying. And when you're ready, the ways about going and getting certified.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say this, I'm not a proponent of getting a document saying you know something, because typically the documents never prove you actually know anything. But it's not about proving self-worth. It's about documenting the fact that you had enough, I guess the word is vitriol, to follow through with getting a certification. It shows your potential employer that you had the desire to complete this. And that's really what I believe certifications prove these days, that you wanted to do something, that you followed through. So that's always, I'll say, good advice when you're in career mode.
And just the dedication that it would take, because if you talk about I'm thinking of Black Hammer, you know, Jeff Owens, a few other guys that we know, Sherwin, for instance, Sherwin, Info Lookup, several people we know do, you know, the independent study and then go and get certified. They're not taking classes per se. Sometimes the options for that are available, but yeah, much like what Dor just said, to get certified, there are many paths, but if you can speak to doing independent study in either these modules or through books, what have you, and then also having potentially implemented some of this into your day-to-day or having more experience, you're going to be that much better for it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, when I got here, Cody, this was just literally a random link I stumbled across, but I'm really bringing it up because I want to ask the community, okay? As a podcaster, it's important for me to try to control my environment, even though I have no control over my own central AC or heat because I'm a husband and anything I say is wrong. There's other things I can control. One of them I would like to control better is the keyboard and my computer. Okay. On ThinkGeek, I stumbled across a link. It said Quiet Pro, the world's quietest mechanical keyboard. Oh, cool, cool. I look at it, look a little bit more, then it's out of stock. Okay, quietest or silent keyboard are buzzwords. There's no standards that people have to achieve in order to call themselves one of these things. So I want to ask the community, do you know of a quote-unquote quiet keyboard or a silent keyboard that I do not have to worry about typing as I podcast? Because I literally try to unbelievably like soft finger keys as I'm podcasting just so I don't accidentally have clicks that come through. So I'll just say, if you do have one, please either ping me on Twitter, even ping me on Facebook, Google Plus, or send in an email. I would like to get a quiet quote unquote keyboard.
Did you bring this up last week or did you ask me this in Voxer?
I know I mentioned it. I don't know if it was on the show or not.
Okay, because I have a keyboard for you, and I'm going to use my loud keyboard right now.
So it ain't the one you're using.
No. I'm using the DOS keyboard, man, and I will probably until the day I die. And if you hear some clicks on the show, then you hear some clicks on the show. I'm not going nuts every second of the show. But there is a fantastic Logitech waterproof keyboard. It is the Logitech washable keyboard K310. And I have a couple of these at my house. One.
Okay, but I'll say really quick, it makes no sense. Every old keyboard was technically like waterproof. You could stick them in your dishwasher and they would work just fine. Because I have.
Can I continue?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So, yes, Dor, anything could fit in your dishwasher. You wash it, doesn't mean it's going to work 100% after the fact.
Oh, they did, though.
Well, are you talking about like the old IBM mechanical keyboards? Yes. Yeah, but guess what? When you look at these lower-end, cheap membrane keyboards now, those things are going to melt under that kind of temperature. So, looking back. Go ahead.
Well, or I believe you put your keyboard in and you get it out, and it's gonna look like a DOS keyboard with no letters.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Those aren't etched. Oh, they were printed or painted on. Darn it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm throwing this link in the show notes as well. Yeah. It's the Logitech K310 washable keyboard. Let me get back.
Well, I would say nowhere in any of the reviews or in the description does it use the word quiet or silent.
I'm getting to that.
I'm just saying they don't tout it.
What's nice about this keyboard? I mean, forget the washable part. That's nice. I bought one for my son, who is getting his first computer built here in next month. Wow, his own machine. And I wanted something. Obviously, if the kids build something on it, I'm not going to be upset. And I didn't want to get just like a disposable keyboard, you know, or something used. I was like, this is going to withstand the test of time. What's nice about this is that each key is raised off of the surface as well, and there is padding underneath each key. So when it actually hits the surface of the keyboard, I would say it's virtually silent. It's the quietest keyboard that I have ever used that isn't marketed as a quiet keyboard. And what's also nice is that without special tools, you can't remove these keys. So your child happens to get a hold of it, you drop it. A pet steps on it. You're not going to have to worry about the delicate mechanisms in the keys getting broken or having to order a special key to fit back on the keyboard. This thing is really nice. Now, they are a tad expensive. On Amazon right now, it's $53.99. Now, I'm not saying everybody should definitely go out and buy a $54 keyboard. That's not the case. But if you're looking for something that will withstand, water and or liquids, potentially children prying, because I'll tell you what, one of my kids destroyed a laptop of mine because he peeled off a bunch of keys. Those springs are gone. The keys are destroyed. It would cost me way too much from that third-party manufacturer to order a replacement keyboard, so I just said, forget it. It's going to be a server now. And the keys are pretty quiet. So at least humor me, Dor. Go check out the video. Go watch it. Go watch some reviews, because if you happen to be in the market for one, if not more, of those features, then this might be a good keyboard for you.
Well, I will say two things. One, I do believe, part of me does believe, the quieter keyboards are probably not even marketed as being quieter keyboards. They're just good keyboards. So that's why I knew it would be kind of hard for me to find one that really did fit my needs. That's why I wanted to ask people. I will leave this in the running, if you will. Mm-hmm. I do like the fact that the keys are actually raised. I do like the fact that the keys cannot be taken off. Mm-hmm. But I will also wait and see if any listener gives any feedback, because like I said about Linux, experience is everything. And I trust your experience, but I want to see what other kinds of experiences people have out there, because they might say, you know, here's a less risky, quote unquote, one. You can be able to get it for $20 off of here, and they swear it's quiet. If it's $20 and it isn't terribly quiet, at least I can use it for something else from our kid, or take it into work, because the one I have at work is horrible, and then look at buying something better. I just want and I've been literally off and on looking for 3 years for a quieter keyboard and just never found one. And ones that were advertised silent, quiet. I go into the store and I start to type on them. I would go into Best Buy, find them.
Yeah.
And they were just unbelievably loud.
Right.
Unbelievably.
Right. Now, even though ThinkGeek was out of the Quiet Pros, if you do go to podnuts.com/Amazon, you can find three or four different models by a manufacturer called Matthias Secure Pro. wireless encrypted keyboard for PC and Mac. No,
yeah, that's
But anyway, mechanical keyboard. Actually, no, yeah. High performance, quiet mechanical key switches. Now, when you and I had this conversation, I'm not going to, I could talk about this forever. I'm not going to. I'm going to make this really quick and short, I promise. There are the different MX keys, so the different mechanisms underneath the keys in mechanical keyboard. There's the cherry, blue, brown, and green, I believe, are the four main ones. Correct me if I'm wrong. Anyway, do your research on those, because some of those have the double depression, single depression. Some are very loud. Some are not. Some are virtually silent. So, and I ran into something similar for this when I was researching custom buttons for my arcade fight sticks, because I would be up late at night playing Street Fighter, just bashing the hell out of it, waking up my wife in the next room, and she's like, "What are you doing? You need to get a quieter arcade stick or something, because this isn't working." I just ended up shutting her door and solving half the problem. But it's the same. And actually, there are arcade fight stick stick buttons that use these same mechanical switches and these special depression pads to deaden the sound. So if you're absolutely in a situation where you need a keyboard like this, I get it. Me, I could care less what people around me think about my typing, but there might be some work situations, some stuff like kind of what I just said, late night at home. I get it. And please, yes, much like Dor said, if you're using something that is working for you, something that's quiet, something that you would recommend to not only us, but maybe to a friend, please let us know. Go to podits.com/contact and let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I'm looking for something. I just don't know what yet. I'll find out. Okay, I want to bring one more link here. And this really utterly confused me. Okay, it's called Brunch. First off, great name. Okay, what it says is, will you be coming to Brunch? Brunch, ... compiles your scripts, templates, styles, lints them, wraps the scripts and templates in a CommonJS AMD modules, concatenates scripts and styles, generates source maps and concatenated files, copies assets and static files, shrinks the output by minifying code and optimizing images, watches your files for changes, and notifies you about errors via console and system notification. Whew, that's a mouthful. Okay. Brunch is a ultra-fast HTML5 build tool. Build is an ultra-fast HTML5 build tool. That made no sense to me whatsoever.
Sounds like a lot.
And I mean no sense.
Sounds like a lot of buzzwords said to me.
How are you going to build HTML5? What are you building it into? When I think build HTML5, you're building it into a Java app, Android app, iOS app, something to that effect, okay? But the site looked good, and I heard about a couple of the other ones that it said in, like, Gulp and its competitors. I've at least heard of them, so I wanted to look into this further, okay? If you're on a high-volume or high-traffic site, every bit of optimization you can get out of your site is going to help everything else run. Okay, here's the gist I'm going to say. If you go to any web page and you hit View Source, and then you pick any CSS file or JavaScript file, you go to that file and say View Source, and you look at it, what you're going to see is what looks like a Word document written in another language. You're going to see a lot of hard returns, a lot of blank white space, and a lot of stuff that's spaced out, okay? That is extremely inefficient. Technically speaking, every hard return in a file is two extra characters. Every white space is an extra character. So in any given style or type of file, whether it's HTML, JavaScript, CSS, or anything else, you could have hundreds and hundreds, upwards of 10, 15, 20% of the file being useless garbage being transmitted over the wire. Okay, number one. So on CSS, for instance, you can run your CSS files against either applications or online web services that will basically take every hard return out, to where if you don't have Word Wrap on and you look at the file, you see this one line going off the end of the page, and it just keeps going.
Terrible.
But it's terrible to read. It's utterly efficient and fantastic. fantastic for websites. Okay. So what this tool does, it enables you to very quickly monitor your source files, click a button, and automatically shrink all of your text files. It also shrinks images files, but it also takes, for instance, in most web pages, you see a great number of links to JavaScript or CSS files. And by a great number, you literally see like 20 plus links to script files. Okay, this tool intelligently combines them when applicable into one file, so you're not hitting the server 20 different times.
That's cool.
Because each time you make a connection, it's going to slow down the user's experience. So this really is about optimizing either high volume, high usage, or large websites to utilizing a lot less resources, okay? Which means there is a market for this. There is definitely, absolutely a market for this. I just don't know how many people out there. But I got to tell people, if you're starting to look at doing professional web development and not using stuff like WordPress, Drupal, Joomla, or anything else, you're actually doing it with HTML, you need to check out the idea of build HTML5 builders. This is the kind of thing that can literally take your site from normal to extraordinary. And this one's called Brunch. It's a really good YouTube video. I'm going to have linked in here. It's from learncode.academy. Now they're talking about Grunt and Gulp or Brunch, just why you need a build system for your website. Really good video, hammered home the points of why you need one. I wish, this is the kind of thing that makes me wish I actually did websites from scratch, because I could see this and I could actually run benchmark tests and see how faster my website is and actually say, well, I'm getting, an extra, 2 megs per, whatever second.
Right. Or
just tout about how fast my website is.
All the fine tuning and the optimization. Yeah. That takes me back to when I was in college. I took a few different Flash classes. One of them was ActionScript and then Advanced ActionScript. And whenever you're learning any sort of languages like that, you just want a project to work. In the beginning, you just want it to work. You don't care if it's elegant or not. You just want it to work. That's all you care about. And the instructor at the time, had us do a project, and then he showed us a more advanced version of it, but it was one single line,
right?
Which was just, it blew our minds, and that was kind of the teaser for the advanced class. Okay, well, now you can take all your garbage spaghetti, mess, horribleness, and look at what you can do, and it actually runs better too. And we're just like, oh wow! So yeah, takes me back when you're talking about the whole word wrap deal,
right? Yeah, so I thought that was really cool. I just wanted to bring it because there's a part of me that believes, when the kids move out and I retire from my 9-to-5, I will actually be able to sit around and create stuff. Maybe. I don't know.
It's going to happen. All right. Very good. And that was our last link for the week. Is that correct, Orr?
Yes, sir.
Very good. Cool, man. Well, like we talked about last week, I want to kind of throw a shout out to someone in the community. Every week, kind of help to broaden your horizons. In fact, I barely mentioned this last week. I don't even know if Doors listened to this show, but I will throw a link in the show notes to a Linux podcast called Third World Linux, hosted by a couple of guys who just talk about their personal Linux use. A couple of them, actually, I believe both of them also use it in work. I've listened to maybe 4 or 5 episodes. I will say some of the episodes, it's just nice conversation. They don't kind of do a bullet point news topics, but what struck me is how well they get along, and the conversational nature of their show was really refreshing to me. Because when you talk about formats and trying to keep everything open versus being very strict, I would much rather have it be open and conversational, and these guys do it very well. So there will be a link in the show notes, but if you just go to channel14.com and search for Third World Linux, you will find their show, and I would urge you to give it a try. So some of them, a couple episodes do get off on some tangents, but being smart about it, they warn you in the beginning of the episode that they did get off on some tangents, and they apologize, knowing that it might not be the best of etiquette, but they do it well.
A Linux podcast that goes off on tangents. I say I find that unacceptable.
Yeah, I agree. And speaking of that, I only have about 15 more minutes worth of Steam stuff to talk about. But we'll save that for another show!
Okay, here's my question.
Sure.
Channel14.com. Looks like the website. I didn't get it at first. Third world. I'm guessing they're saying third world economic type countries. What is their country?
I knew you were going to ask me that, and now I feel awful. I want to say one of them is in Brazil, and one of them is in Argentina. Or one of them just recently moved from one, and now they live in the same country, but I forget which is which, because I'm a terrible new listener.
Well, and I'll say, being an ignorant American, how bad is their accents?
Almost indistinguishable. They speak English very well. Yeah. So okay. if you're worried about that, don't be.
Well, I'll say my number one reason for asking is I speed up my podcast now up to 2.5 in speed. The clearer people talk, the faster I can speed it up. So
right.
The harder the accent, the less I can speed it up. The less I can speed it up, typically, the less I stay subscribed.
Okay.
Because I'm an ignorant American.
Right. You're just, well, it's not that you're ignorant. It's just that you're impatient. And you're an old curmudgeon, and you have a lawn specifically so you can yell at children to stay off of it.
Could be worse.
I agree. All right. Cool door. Yeah. So, yeah, Third World Linux. Check them out. Good show. I'm very, very pleased with my time I've invested in so far, and I think you will be too.
And they do have an AUG feed, Golf Clap, guys.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, all about the AUG. Yes. Cool door. All right, so where can we find you online?
You can actually find me anywhere. Just search Steve McLaughlin or Door-to-Door Geek, all one word, DoorToDoorGeek. That's the number. That's the word two, not the number T-O, not the number two. Or you can just email me directly at mail@podcast.com or DoorToDoorGeek@gmail.com. You can always find me lingering around, I'll say.
Very good. You guys want to hit me up, you can send me an email to cody@podnest.com. Follow me on Twitter @CodyCooper or search for Cody Cooper on Google+. I am there pretty much every hour of every day. You want to send an email to the show, please send it to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com, or you can go to podnest.com/contact. Use the form to send us a message. We'd love to hear from you. In addition to those, please send us a voicemail to 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. Please keep it under 60 seconds. If you go a little bit over, that's cool, but if you're going into like the two-minute territory, consider splitting it up into two voicemails. You can call us twice. That would be awesome. And thank you once again to everybody for using our affiliate links. That is podnest.com/Amazon and /eBay are the two bigger ones that we're seeing a lot of traction from. Those funds go to help purchase items for a production of the show, for some of our hosting needs, and several other things that we do, including giving things away to our Linux for the Rest of Us Club, which you can go sign up for by going to podnest.com/Linux for the Rest of Us Club. It's absolutely free. And you just qualify to win free stuff. So check it out.
Yeah, and I'll quickly publicly apologize. I've been booked for 10 hours of meetings a day in an 8-hour work day for weeks every day. When I leave in the morning, the post office is closed. When I come home, the post office is closed. I haven't had a lunch at my 9-to-5, an actual lunch, in probably 3 months because of the amount of stuff that needs to get done. And to be honest, on Saturday, I've been exhausted and sleeping most of the time until the post office is already closed. So I have not had a chance to ship out those beagle bones. It is completely my fault. And I want to publicly apologize to our two winners who are still patiently waiting for their hardware.
But they will be on the way soon. In addition to that, I have not sent out the Linux Fest Northwest swag pack to the winner that won that for similar reasons to Door, but I'm going to blame him for it because he's leading by example and it's a bad one.
Do you know what I need?
I got a couple ideas.
I need an Internet of Things connected device that would help me with shipping.
I know an operating system that has that as a key feature you should try installing next month.
Good man. Thank
you. All right. Cool. Once again, thank you everyone for listening. We really do appreciate all the support and everything that the community does for us in turn and what we do for you. So thank you for that. But please remember, most importantly, that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.